We're CJMQ, and we're talking with Ed Griffin today. Griffin, the author, and also teaches creative writing at a number of prisons in Canada. And I believe this is your fourth book. You've already done three others, too?
That's right. It's Beyond the Vows. It's a fictionalized account of my 5 years in the Catholic priesthood, Maureen. It was helpful for me to write the book because I was able to reflect on my own life. I learned a lot about myself by writing it. But I also think it's a very strong book, and it's has a good plot to it, too. And I compressed my life a little bit in writing the book, but it's mainly the story of my going into the Catholic priesthood and departing it.
Okay, and you actually started grade 8 or grade 7, I guess, in the seminary, and there you went to study for a Catholic priest, began your professional life in 1962 in Cleveland. Yeah, the character of J.P. in the book, that's pretty much parallels your life, does it not, Ed?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Right. I was ordained, as you said, in 1962, after spending my whole life in the seminary, high school, college, and post-college. I was assigned to a suburban parish, an all-white suburb of Cleveland. I became, through paying attention to people and listening to people and listening to the news, the civil rights movement was very strong in those years. And I became pretty convinced that the key religious issue that people were facing in those days was the civil rights movement. So I went to Selma and marched with Dr. King from Selma to Montgomery for voting rights. It was a great moment in my life, a very dramatic moment. I went with another priest. When I came back, I was removed from the white parish. The pastor at the time was building a new church, and several of his parishioners had gone to him and said, and they used a bad word, either you get rid of that nigger lover or we're not going to give you another dime for the new church. Now, my pastor went to the bishop, and I was moved into the central city. This was very traumatic for a young priest. Normally, a young priest was kept in a parish for 5 years, and everything was fine, so mm-hmm. forth. But I was only in that parish for 3 years.
Okay, so that's when you began to see what a little bit about Beyond the Vows means.
Right, mm-hmm. right, right. I began to start asking questions. I mean, this move radicalized me. My fellow priest that I went to Selma with, his pastor had the congregation praying for him. It all depends on leadership.
Mm-hmm.
If leadership says this is a good thing and we should pray for the safety of our priest down there in Selma, which is what my colleague's pastor did, he was fine. There was no repercussions on him. But it began to make me ask questions, and I started to question some of the things about the Catholic Church. I then served for 2 years in the central city, and I got angrier and angrier because maybe the church couldn't help it, but they were spending all of their money in the suburbs building new churches because, logically, Catholics were moving out to the suburbs. But the central city was getting nothing. And I was dealing with babies that rats would climb into the cribs and bite babies. And, you know, the conditions in my district were terrible.
Okay. So a lot of money put into the buildings and decorations and things like that, whereas the basic needs weren't being met. And you began to question.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I got... as I said, very angry. I confronted the bishop that the church wasn't doing very much in the central city. And for a Catholic priest, at least in those times, confronting the bishop just wasn't done. I mean, the bishop, I was taught in the seminary spoke for God. But interestingly enough, Maureen, after I confronted the bishop, I sort of became a man in my own mind anyway. And after somebody becomes a man, the next thing they do is fall in love.
Well, that's exactly what happened to J.P., your character in the book. When he confronted the bishop, he felt freedom and became a man in his own words, I guess.
Right. Well, it's certainly based on reality in my own life. I fell in love with a young woman in the parish who worked with me, with youth, a black woman. She was a great person. I never even kissed her.
Okay.
I was pretty ignorant of women in totality. And I also had problems with, if I was gonna pursue a relationship with a woman, I could not remain a priest. Some of my fellow priests could do that, but I certainly couldn't in my own mind. If I was going to pursue the relationship, I had to leave. I did leave about 3 months after that.
Okay. And do you think meeting Martin Luther King was one of the major steps in helping you to, well, find yourself?
Definitely. Definitely. The man was an amazing person. If I could just tell you two little stories. One was when my fellow priests and I were on the way to the march in Selma. Martin Luther King had talked in Cleveland that night, and he was on the plane that we were on going to Selma. We went up to talk to him, and I thought, well, he's a great leader, and so he's going to be talking about his great crusade to change the world, et cetera, et cetera. But he didn't. He talked about our travel plans. It just amazed me. Here was this great leader on his way back to Atlanta, and he talked not about his crusade, but about our travel plans. And he said, now when you get to Selma, no white cab company is going to take you to the march. So he wrote on a piece of paper the name of a black-owned cab company that would take us to the march. So here's a great man, and he cares about two people's travel plans. Another time, I was at an inner-city minister's meeting in the basement of a church in Cleveland. And the ministers were gathered around, and they were talking about how to get jobs for black people and so forth. Martin Luther King was in the center of this crowd, and everybody was very serious and talking away. And all of a sudden, the janitor comes into the room, down to the basement to empty the garbage. And he takes one look, and he sees Martin Luther King sitting at the center of this table. And he stops the meeting. Well, Dr. King, I'm so proud to see you, and could you please sign a piece of paper for me, and so forth and so on. And King was amazing. He stopped the meeting. He gave the man his autograph and respected the man. And the ministers were upset with this janitor for doing this, but King valued the individual and respected the individual.
Okay, and definitely affected you a lot in your decision then to leave the church. And after that, you went for a master's degree. And then after that, you got involved in politics, elected to Milwaukee City Council in 1972.
Right. I was trying to find a way to help the world, I guess. I had always wanted to help people. I was not very good as a politician, to be perfectly frank. I was very good at getting elected. I knew how to do that, and I worked hard. I know how to work hard. But I didn't have a political frame of mind. And I didn't see issues in political terms. I saw them in should terms. What should be, and I think a politician has to look at things in terms of political terms. I only served one term in Milwaukee City Council, and then left. I kind of have a theory, Maureen, that you can take the man out of the priesthood, But I'm not sure you can take the priesthood out of the man. I think in my life, I continue to find ways to exercise, well, I guess it's called priesthood. It has nothing to do, or very little to do, with God or with religion. What I do in jail right now, I try to help guys to write. I love writing. I think it's very therapeutic. It also can help inform the world about what really happens in prison. But I think that's a kind of a, like a priesthood occupation, but it has nothing to do with furthering any religion.
Okay. Now, did you write the book in order to help you to come to terms with leaving the priest?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was very traumatic. The Catholic Church in the seminary used to tell all of us that if you left the priesthood, you were certainly going to go to hell, and that you were a pariah, a bad person. They used to take us down the halls, and they would point to different pictures of classes that had graduated from the seminary. They would point to certain individuals who had left the priesthood, and the tone would be one of horror, and that you were a definite pariah if you left. And I was susceptible to that. When I left the priesthood, I did feel like a pariah.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to fight with myself for many years to overcome that.
Okay.
And I think I had to work hard to get some of the church ideas out of my head. But I don't want to. The church gave me many good things. John the 23rd, the Pope who started the Vatican Council, wrote two great encyclicals, Pacem Terris and Moderate Magistra, and those two encyclicals gave me the goals of my life, that the world needed to be organized better, that war was a terrible way to solve things, that democracy was a good form of government, that the poor needed help. I mean, all those things, all those, my goals in life I got from the Catholic Church, so I certainly can't, I appreciate the path that I had. I'm not against the Catholic Church.
Okay, so
my spirituality has definitely changed. I don't go to church, but I do try to live a spiritual life, a life related to God.
Okay, so I guess one of the things that you want people to get out of the book, Beyond the Vows by Ed Griffin, is that it's very possible to be a very spiritual person without having an organized religion behind you.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, right.
Good. And did you find the book helped you to put a lot of the voices, the negative voices in your head, beyond you? Or?
Yes. Oh, yes, it
mm-hmm.
did. Writing
good.
It and sort of summarizing my life as a Catholic priest, yes,
mm-hmm.
it did help me to deal with the past. I had the book done, Maureen, as print on demand. It's available through Amazon and through Chapters, with the hope that someday it might take off and be commercially successful, but I'm not worried about that. I did it for myself and for anybody else who might benefit from that kind of thing.
Okay, so this is definitely a book for you then, and that's great. And how is the book doing? I would imagine that getting a lot of comments after people do read the book.
Oh, yeah. It's because I've been trained as a writer to write for the supermarket instead of the literary journal. So I try to write exciting plots and keep page turner.
Mm-hmm.
I try to the thing I want people to say after they read my book is I couldn't put it down, and that's the kind of book I'm trying to write. I frankly try to write good theme based books, but with popular appeal.
Okay, and I remember when I was talking to you before, you said that a lot of people want to be in a literary journal. You want to be in the supermarket. You want to
that's
be available
right.
to the ordinary person, and
right,
that's
right.
great. That's wonderful. Okay, and I think a lot of us out there, a lot of baby boomers, were exposed to a lot of ideas from the Catholic Church, too. So I think that can help a lot of people come to terms with themselves and their values, too.
Right. The Catholic Church was very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gained a lot from my time in the church and from my learning there.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to unlearn many things as well as learn some things.
Right. And now you're based in B.C. Was there a reason that you came to Canada after?
Well, I think we, my wife and I met my wife after I got my master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
We really kept going up to Canada every year. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
We lived in America, but we kept going up to Canada for vacation. And gradually we came to realize that we probably were Canadian.
Okay.
And so when we went to the Chicago, to the consulate in Chicago to make our application for entry into Canada, and the consulate at the time said, well, you always have been Canadians. So I think we loved Canada. We liked its social system. We liked the fact that it took care of poor people. We liked its lack of violence. When we came here to Vancouver in 1988, there were 10 times less killings in Vancouver than there were in Milwaukee.
Okay.
And the two cities are about the same size.
Amazing. Okay. And most of the characters in the book of Beyond the Vows, Caitlin, your wife, Joe, and your friend Terry, most of them are based on real people. It's just the story
definitely.
Is condensed.
The janitor, the intellectual janitor, mm-hmm. the well-read janitor, was a man in one of the inner city parishes. He was a postman. He also worked as a janitor in the church. He was an amazing character that changed my life.
Okay.
A black man who had read everything. I couldn't pull out a new theologian that he hadn't read.
Interesting,
amazing,
yeah.
Man.
And I think we can make an analogy to that, too. When we look at people, a lot of people just judge the people on how they dress
they
or whatever. So, you know,
right,
there's a
right.
lot between the covers there. Okay,
right.
Great. Would you like to talk a little bit about the cover, Beyond the Vows, the cover of the book?
Yes, my cousin did that book cover. She's an artist, and it's kind of, she did it, she has read the book, and she
mm-hmm.
knew the story, and she tried to make it a dark-looking cover with light inside the door,
mm-hmm.
and so the lead character, JP, walks through this door, actually out of the church and into the light.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the idea she had. So that walking up the steps, and it's a challenging thing to go up the steps and go through the half-open door into the light was the theme of the book that the character has gone into. I don't mean to be anti-religious. I think religion has done me a great deal of good, but it has excesses, and those excesses must be dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there are things in the Catholic Church that I couldn't possibly agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Not letting women become priests. The rules on birth control, absolutely silly.
Mm-hmm.
But while there are silly things and stupid things, there are also wonderful things, too. It's hard to explain.
Oh, well, that's great. I think a lot of people can relate to that, too, just a lot of rituals, and we have to look at ourselves and our own conscience, too, and that's great. So you certainly found a lot of light beyond the vows, then. That's great.
Right,
good.
Right. Yeah, so it was a pleasure to write it. I'm still writing. I just finished a nonfiction book, too, about prison.
Okay.
I wrote it with an inmate.
Mm-hmm.
He and I both told our experiences in prison. I've been teaching in prison for 23 years, and I've learned a lot, and I've seen a lot. And so,
that's a great book, too, yes.
The book on that.
Okay, Dystopia. Yes, we also had an interview with you and Mike on that, and that was great,
right,
too.
Right.
Now, Ed, you believe strongly in the arts, including writing. Art releases unconscious tensions and purges the soul.
Right, Aristotle said
okay.
about 2,000 years before Christ.
Right.
And I'm trying to get the prison system to agree with that idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Now, if someone wants to go to your website, Ed, you mentioned your website before. It's
edgriffin.net. And Ed Griffin is G-R-I-F-F-I-N is Griffin. It has an I at the end, not an E, .net. So it's a very simple email. And that has information and samples of all my books and so forth. And that's where people can take a look at them, even read the first chapter and so forth.
Oh, that's great. Good. Anything else you wanted to say about the book, Ed, before we go?
No, it was great to write it, and I hope it has an impact on people. A couple of people have read it, told me that it has changed their life, too.
It certainly has. It's certainly a book that makes me look at myself and religion and spirituality a lot differently. Ed Griffin, Beyond the Vows. Well, thank you very much, Ed, and we wish you all the luck in the future.
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now.